Education sessions, I feel like.
Yeah, I'm Giselle.
How do you spell your name?
Giselle.
Yeah, I got it now. All right, cool.
Yeah, we probably need to do official introductions once Jennifer gets back and we find out who's on the
phone. Someone has entered the conference.
We haven't met since orientation.
Hi, who's on the call?
Hi, everybody. This is Eric Dieter calling in.
Hey, Eric.
Hey, Eric.
Hey.
We're still gathering.
Okay.
And our hall is weird
so
because
you guys are in the cold hall.
Well, there's a cold side and a warm side.
Oh.
And so
is your side warm of the hall?
I get like panicky sometimes because my office is so hot, and then I walk to your side and I'm like,
it's like sitting in a refrigerator.
But I can't stay very long.
No.
it's different. And there's a pound cake in the break room, so
I saw that, recently. It was not always like this.
Right?
Oh, yeah. And like the last month or two, I feel like the temperature always got much colder.
Now I'm like keeping my door closed, which makes me look like I'm angry. But
same.
It's for temperature control.
Same.
So.
I think it's cooler when your door's closed.
Yeah, mine's cooler when my door's closed. So for that, I was like debating, like, do I put it like a slightly face poster down? Printers are working this morning.
How are you? Hi, everybody. Thank you. So we have Eric on the phone. I don't think we have anyone else on the phone. Has anybody else joined us on the phone?
Okay. So what we can do is just go. I would like us first to go around the room and meet each other as a team. Some of us know each other. Some of us don't. And then if we can talk a little bit about why you are on this team. Obviously, it's not for the money, fame, or glory. Mm-hmm. So it has to be for some, maybe it is, I don't know. I would love to hear why this particular topic resonated with you and sort of, or why you would wanted to work on this. I can start. I actually might be the one person that actually gets paid, or a couple of us get paid to be here, right? There you go.
If this were not my job, I'm sorry, I wouldn't be here. I would be on my bicycle. I would be at the polls or on my bicycle.
My name is Jennifer Gearish, and I'm a health behavioralist by training. I trained at UNC in the health behavior department. I am the associate director of the ESP Center, the Evidence Synthesis Program here at the Durham VA, and have been with the program as a co-investigator since 2008. And as a core investigator, I don't know, Jen, how long? A while. And then came on as associate director 2 years ago. So, I would say more sort of behavioral research is kind of my focus, complex interventions around all those things that we, you know, like say that we should be doing more of, like eating right and physical activity and managing our weight, among other sort of chronic disease management stuff. I also do a significant amount of patient and stakeholder engagement and co-direct the office on community engaged research through the Duke CTSA.
Sure. I'm Leah Zulik, and I'm on the VA side of Career Development Authority, and the Duke side, junior faculty. And the focus of my career development award and kind of my main research interest is on folks who have multiple comorbid conditions, multiple chronic conditions, and notably cancer and cardiovascular disease. I'm interested in doing this because while I've worked on several smaller systematic reviews, I've never been part of an ESP project, so I think it's going to be fun to learn that process. And women's health, I would say, is kind of a secondary interest of mine. It's not something that we have an opportunity to do a lot in VA cancer data because there just aren't that many women with cancer. Yeah. Receiving care in the VA system.
So I'm Karen Goldstein. I am a general internist, oversee patients over in the VA and set up an HSR&D I'm also a career development awardee. My focus is on peer support intervention development for cardiovascular risk reduction for women veterans. I think it's my 30th project, so I guess I sort of drunk the Kool-Aid with these guys.
So repeat customer, that's what
repeat
we like.
Repeat customer.
Yeah. Avi?
Hi, my name is Abhishek Nagi, but you can call me Avi. And I'm the research assistant, and I help with like technical stuff and screening, pulling PDFs, things like that.
Hi, I'm Giselle. Actually, I'm doing my master in clinical research at Duke, and I really want to learn more about the systematic reviews, and I really liked the topic about women healthcare because it's interesting for me.
Excellent.
I'm from Brazil, and I'm becoming a cardiologist there, so I'm a visiting fellowship here at Duke.
Welcome, and thank you. How did you hear about our program?
Because I did the systematic review class
John's
with John.
Oh, John's class. Okay, cool. Thank you. I guess we also should. I knew how you guys had heard about it, but I didn't know how. So you were from the class.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And if you survived John's class and you liked it, that's good.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's a good litmus test for this.
Yes. I'm Jen McDuffie. I'm the program manager. I do whatever.
Hi, I'm Amir. I'm an ER physician. I got my MPH from UNC, and currently I'm a third year PhD student at the Health Policy and Management, working on my dissertation. I have a bit experience on both telemedicine and systematic reviews. And so I'm really happy to join you.
And you came to us through Morris, right?
Yes.
Okay, Morris member. Thank you.
And then and Eric?
Hi everybody. I'm another one of the career development awardees on the team. I spend most of my time actually trying to help veterans with PTSD quit smoking. So I'm currently working on a trial looking at combined treatment. So you give them cognitive processing therapy at the same time that they're trying to quit smoking. But one of my training aims is on technology and psychotherapy, so I'm really interested, and what interested me in this project was the opportunity to take a systematic look at the literature and figure out what engages people in telehealth treatments and what works in telehealth treatments.
Excellent. And then, Jen, who else is on the team who can't be here today?
I do not have that list with me, so... Let's see, I have a partial list. Timothy Brearley is not with us. He's out of town.
Okay.
So he's distant. John Whitted is not with us. And Hayden. The rest.
Isn't Hayden on this team?
Mm-hmm. Hayden is on this team. This team has 12 people on it. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 9, 10, 11. So we've had 11 out of 12.
Okay.
Hayden, John, and Timothy. We had somebody drop off.
Oh, John, Adam. Doy. Adam Goldstein.
Adam Good.
And Adam Good is on the fence. He just got his R01 got favorably scored, and so he's thinking he's going to try and resub. So he may bow out. Well, he was trying to figure out if this will fit in. But of those people, I don't know Tim. Do you want to introduce him? Probably know John better than I do. Just say who he is.
John is our, what's his official title? The ACOS for research for the VA. And his background, at least related to this, is that he did a telehealth intervention development in dermatology that actually we use all the time. It's honestly my favorite telehealth intervention we use in the VA. And so I think that was his career development award back in the day. And I don't know what other research that he's done since then, but that's his background.
Yeah, that's great that he works on his practical experience and how you would operationalize this within the VA. Yeah. And for the folks that don't know, Hayden Bosworth is the associate director of the HSR&D research unit here. And he's done a variety of telehealth interventions for the last 12 years or something like that. Mostly around chronic disease management, hypertension. He's one of your mentors, so you probably categorizing.
Yeah, I mean, he's actually tried to do kind of some work among women and African Americans, specifically with cardiovascular disease. Rolled out in the North Carolina Medicaid population.
Good. So it's a nice mix of people who've had practical experience and intervention experience, and it's a team with a lot of deep knowledge in this area, I think. I think one other good thing is that for those of you who went to the briefing, the ESP briefing.
Someone has entered the conference.
The first time that we've done one of those, it gave you a nice overview of what the actual ESP process is, which is what we normally do in this first call, team call. But since we've done that, we don't have to do that again. But if you do have questions about what that process is as it is unfolding, let us know. And if there's always opportunities for people to take leadership in particular pieces of this. And so, especially for the career awardees, folks that are on the table, and anyone who has specific research interests, if you have a particular variable that you're interested in or some angle, let us know, and we may be able to collect some data on that may be able to feed into your own project. So we always try and double dip on these things whenever possible to help it feed your research portfolio as well.
Who just joined us on the phone?
Hi, it's Suchita Sata. I'm at Duke. I tried to WebEx, but I couldn't hear anything, so I joined in through the VA teleconference number.
Thank you so much for joining us. We just went around the table and introduced ourselves. And I was also asking folks, this is Jennifer Gearish speaking. I think we met at the ESP kickoff.
Yes. Yeah, we did.
Would like just to hear a little bit about why this particular topic interested you, or why you've decided to sort of work on one of the ESPs this year.
Absolutely. I'm a hospitalist at Duke Hospital. I don't work at the VA, but I am really interested in how we can leverage out of hospital or out of clinic ways to try to take care of patients. And so also don't have much experience in this realm, so I'm hoping to learn a lot through the process.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I do want to recognize that every project, we usually pair a methodological lead, which is myself or John, with a content lead. And I want to recognize the fact that Karen Goldstein will be our content lead this year. The way that I generally do this with the content leads is it's kind of like a co-PI ship. We'll be making a lot of those decisions together. And we've been meeting about once a week for the last month to try and shape out some things on this project. So things have been going on in the background. The major thrust of today is to review the topic nomination brief that I hope some of you have had a chance to read, and then talk about what I think is going to be the major sticking point on this project, which is definition and scope. As it is on many of these ESP projects, but I think especially this one, because it's, you know, telemedicine, telehealth, is such a broad topic, and we need to think about how we're going to scope it. And also this idea of evidence mapping, which is very different than a traditional systematic review. So some of you who are card-carrying systematic reviewers, I know you're one, this is a very different methodology. You're using a systematic approach, but you're not looking at creating those effect estimates at the end. Would you want to lead us through that?
Yeah, sure. So hopefully you have had a chance, this is Karen speaking for those on the phone, to look at the topic nomination brief, but I'll just kind of walk you through what I think are the highlights and some of the sticking points that Jennifer and I have talked a little bit about trying to sort out. So I think one of the big pieces to look at who the operational partners are, because we want to remember that this is a project that was brought forward by these operational partners, and ultimately our goal is to have a product that will help them answer the questions that they have and ideally inform the kind of programmatic things that they're hoping to do in the VA. And so that will drive a little bit of how we think about this project, and also in our future conversations with them to sort of narrow the scope of it. So Sally Haskell is the lead of the Office of Women's Health. Nancy Mayer works with her, so they are sort of the directors of the Women's Healthcare Services in the VA. Gina Capra, I guess that's how you say her name, is Office of Rural Health. So for those of you who don't necessarily practice in the VA, you probably are aware that a large population of the VA lives in rural U.S. And so there's a huge impetus in terms of providing clinical services to those individuals, especially more recently, without making them come all the way into a VA. So on a routine basis, I have patients who drive a couple hours to come in for appointments, which is not very patient-centered. So there's been a big push to try to find ways to bring care to the patients wherever they live. So they do a lot of the telehealth work within the VA to address that issue. And then Kathy Frisbee is the director of Connected Health. So this is an office that I was a little less familiar with, but after spending all the time on their website. They are the group that's sort of overarching this concept of telehealth, but it's a little bit more than just telehealth. So they also have a big emphasis, at least on what they have on their website, around mobile apps and mobile devices, and then app-based technology to support care. So they do some things like giving physicians tablets to use on the floor, in addition to giving patients who live far away or who get some outside care some sort of device that allows them direct access to the chart. So they do those kind of concepts.
We should send the team the link to their website.
Yeah.
I think that that would just to kind of get people up to speed on what the sort of breadth and scope of what they do.
Yeah. And I'll also back up to point out that telehealth, one of the things we're talking about is what the actual definition is of telehealth mm-hmm. and how we're going to be defining that and sort of operationalizing that. When looking through some of their websites, you know, and from just experiencing it on the clinical side, telehealth in general seems to focus on disease and patient management, largely using synchronous and asynchronous approaches. So synchronous approaches being like a phone video conference where you have a patient who's a couple hours away sitting in an office video conferencing with a, you know, consultant who's somewhere else. So this happens, for example, with telegenetics. So we have people in Utah that run the telegenetics program for the VA, and then patients all over the country do video conferences then to get their genetic counseling. So things kind of like that versus asynchronous.
Someone has entered the conference.
So asynchronous would be an example where someone's entering in data that someone else is looking at a later time. So there's not that direct time-based communication.
And who just joined us?
Sorry, this is Hayden.
Hey, Hayden.
Hayden, if you just want to take, this is Jennifer Gearish, if you just want to take a minute to introduce yourself and then why you have a particular interest in this topic of women's telehealth.
Sure. I apologize for coming in late. My name is Hayden Bosworth. I'm the Associate Director here for the Center for Health Services Research and Primary Care. I'm a faculty member in medicine, psychiatry, nursing, and also the new department that will come online in July. I've done 20 years ago with Lori and Mimi Butterfield work with women's health and mental health, and have always had an interest in women's health, and also have done a number of trials regarding telehealth in the VA and outside the VA.
Excellent. Thanks, Hayden.
So, Hayden, we're just going through the topic nomination brief, and I was just sort of defining for folks who our operational partners are and some of the work that's going on in their offices within the VA. So I think that just gives you a sense of who is interested and why they wanted this project to be done. When you go in and you look at sort of the background, you start to get some hints about what they are looking for. So they talk about an evidence map. Bless you.
Excuse me.
But they also say an evidence map that would demonstrate the overall effectiveness of each intervention type, as well as highlight gaps in the literature to inform future research priorities. So
which
I think
is not an evidence map.
Right. So I think this is a bit of the crux, and if you want to jump in and talk about evidence maps, but you know, the sort of overall effectiveness, sort of talking about treatment effect estimates, is really the systematic review activities, and an evidence map really is not that. And so this is going to be one of the big tensions because, you know, while we are nice, robust, and it sounds like a very skilled and energetic group, there's limitations on what we can realistically do.
Yeah, and so, and I will jump in here and talk a little bit about what an evidence map is and how it differs from a traditional systematic review. Because, again, the language in the topic nomination brief straddles both. It talks about wanting an evidence map, but then it talks about looking at effectiveness and evaluating. At its core, and I think I sent around, or Avi sent around yesterday, just a brief of what, and he's going to call it up on the WebEx now, of sort of what we think about, we being the Durham ESP, think about when we talk about evidence mapping. And I'll be honest with you, this is an evolving methodology, and it, as such, we have a real opportunity to innovate and customize this to what our partners need and what our capacities are to do this work. And so some of this will be a bit of a back and forth with our partners, and also based on the volume of the literature, how deeply we can go into things like pulling out individual effect size on studies and thinking about how we might display those data. But at its highest level, an evidence map really is mapping the sort of epidemiology of a field. What are the types of studies? What are the types of populations? What are the interventions that have been done? You know, at a high level, what are those effects? Are they generally positive? Are they generally null? How many systematic reviews have been there in that field? And then trying to make some statements about where there might be key gaps in the either types of studies or types of interventions, or where there seems to be large volumes of literature, but we're not doing what you would do in a traditional systematic review, which is pulling out effect sizes, looking at where you can synthesize either quantitatively or qualitatively to get an effect estimate and say, you know, this works across, you know, the 3,000 people we've pooled across these 15 studies. That's not evidence mapping. That's more of a traditional systematic review. In essence, you're thinking about is it mapping what is out there in a body of literature.
Which is appropriate for all the different aspects of telehealth and kind of how broadly they want to look at us to look at women's care.
Mm-hmm.
Because we could pull, 15 traditional SRs out of, you know, what they're asking
easily,
us to look
easily
at?
Easily, you could make up 15 traditional SRs out of this topic nomination brief. So, I mean, that's something that we're going to have to be in tight dialogue with our partners about. If they want to do it, I mean, if they really want a traditional systematic review, we're going to have to go back and do some serious rescoping with them. But I think this is a good first step for them to say, what's out there? You know, what models have been specifically developed for women that have this telemedicine bent on it? And, you know, from our initial looking in the literature, there is nothing like this out there. And there are actually very few systematic reviews on telehealth interventions for women.
Right.
So, Leah, did you have a...
Well, I just have a question kind of looking at the scope. Like, I assume that they're interested in telehealth interventions for women veterans, but not necessarily in the VA. I don't know. It's not clear. I guess the language sometimes drops the VA nomenclature. Mm-hmm. So are they interested in just telehealth among women or among women veterans?
That's a very good question. I think they are looking at how applicable our findings could be to VA users.
Mm-hmm. And that's often what happens with our reports because we look much more broadly in mm-hmm. the whole literature. And then one of the things are stakeholders can do is say, okay, here's what the whole literature says, what applies to veterans, what can we use for veterans?
Or we always collect the variable.
Like VA, not VA.
Exactly. Yeah. We always collect that. Or VA users, non-VA users, veterans, non-veterans.
Right.
So they can look at the samples that may be most applicable. Mm-hmm. But generally, at least in this VA ESP, we've never limited just to veteran-only studies because that really does sort of narrow the pool down significantly. And I think that they're looking to learn what are these models broadly that we can innovate within the VA.
So, right.
Go ahead, Abby. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry.
Which kind of study designs you're interested in?
We're getting there.
So that's a great question. And that will be really important as we think about the scope. So I think shifting to look at the key questions, I mean, I think we've sort of touched on this issue because what they kind of write out is what they see in an evidence map, including things like having a visual display of evidence map, and that's a very common technique. So I don't know if we'd sent out the examples of evidence maps, but if you have interest, we can kind of show you some of the bubble plots and things that people use to sort of visually display what the range of studies out there is. But then they also mentioned a set of executive summaries that would provide an overview. And so we've talked a little bit about this, and again, I think we'll tease it out as we go forward. There are some examples from other ESP projects that have been called an evidence map where they've done the executive summaries, but those circumstances seem to be places where there are a lot of SRs in existence that can be drawn from to summarize. And from our sort of initial look at the literature, I don't think we're going to have that.
No, we don't have
that. And
luxury
so,
topic.
Yeah, so it would be very hard to summarize without having that. So I think that's one of the issues that we'll talk about. And then they also mentioned a few other things at the end of the paragraph that I think to me and from talking to Jennifer, I think read as like next steps. So they talk about a subsequent review that may examine in further detail the outcomes. They also talk about implementation barriers and strategies that have been demonstrated to mitigate barriers and uptake of telehealth services, which is really a whole other kind of conversation. But, you know, a good evidence map could say like, hey, these are the studies that have addressed this issue. Now someone can go back and take those studies and pull that information.
And so we're lucky that we were able to see the full, so when a partner organization submits one of these topic nomination forms, it's not in the form that we disseminated to you yesterday. These are the questions we're interested in, a little bit of background information. The original partners had, I think, 5 or 6 questions that they wanted, and it was really very soup to nuts. They wanted to know about effectiveness. They wanted to know about what was out there. They wanted to know about implementation variables. They, I mean, and across a wide variety of topics. Mm-hmm. And so the Coordinating Center has already sort of whittled them down to these two. And so I feel like I can't stress enough that one of the things that we're going to be doing with the partners is really talking with them about how we can provide something for you that's of value and that allows you to kind of lay out your next steps. And some of those next steps might be there's enough data in telecolposcopy or telegyne or whatever that we can go in and do a very focused systematic review and then get them some of those information on implementation variables and effect estimates to see if this is something that the VA wants to pick up and run with. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes what we do when topics are this big is say, okay, where's your priority? Because what central office will sometimes do is take a topic, split it in half, and move the second half to the next year. Mm-hmm. So a valid question would be, okay, you're asking these two major questions, which one do you want us to answer first? Mm-hmm. And would it be okay if that's the one we take on this year?
Mm-hmm. Though, I mean, yeah, absolutely. Reading what the topic nomination brief is and reading some of the backstory from the partners, I do think that it's a very logical first step that an evidence map could be very useful to those offices just to kind of get a lay of the land and see what's out there and the volume of the literature that's specific to women. Because it really, as I said, we've been diving into this literature a little bit and we haven't found much.
Yeah.
But systematically sort of organized that.
Okay. So I think if you look at the two key questions, they really kind of pull out those two different topics. So the first is really more the evidence map. So what are the telehealth service delivery models that are designed specifically for women? Because this also gets back at Leo's question, and I think we're sort of anchoring to the design specifically for women. So there are a lot of telehealth interventions out there that are for both genders, but may or may not do any sort of gender-specific analysis. But I think we are focusing on those that are designed specifically for women and do not intend to have this be a sort of a search through all subgroup analyses and things like that. So I think that's one thing to think about and was sort of a helpful way for us to start thinking about how to start to narrow this down. The other big topic, I think, is how one defines telehealth, and I don't know if you want to have a conversation around that now or later, but all right, so I'll keep kind of marching through, but the definition of telehealth, especially for those of you who've done this work, will know better than I do, and is that from just our look at this, there are many ways that's defined, especially when it comes to operationalizing that in terms of a literature search. And then the second key question really is sort of helpful to list the things they're thinking about, which is a lot, right? So telegynecology, colposcopy, mental health pharmacy, care coordination, and then they bring in the whole online and mobile apps, which is a whole sort of mm-hmm. different world that comes into telehealth. So those are gonna be some of the places where we have to kind of make some choices about how to define those things and then work with our stakeholders to decide, you know, which of these are the most important and how we want to approach it. Mm-hmm.
So if you think about these two KQs, again, as Karen laid out, the first one really is sort of framed in a way that is a very, not that there's such thing as a traditional evidence map, but is framed in a way that lends itself to an evidence map. The second question is really framed in a way that lends itself to about 16 systematic reviews. So you could get at this idea of effectiveness. Because to do effectiveness, again, you're pulling out effect sizes and doing some sort of combining of the data, either qualitatively or quantitatively. So again, that's that point of we need to make sure that we're all on the same page moving forward with that with our stakeholders, and that we in this room are also all on the same page with what that would look like.
Yep. I just have a general question. Uh-huh. For KQ1, says telehealth services delivery models. The example would be like telemental health and telepharmacy. Is that model?
So that's a great question. I don't know that I know exactly what their intent is. I mean, I think that could encompass a number of things. So that could be like what actual care is being delivered, but it also could be mode, right, exactly. So are you doing this by phone? Are you doing this by video? Is this being done online? My guess is the model piece of it is more the mode, but. And then maybe they're looking at the modes under each of these topical categories.
It's a great question, Avi.
But I think it's a good question.
So it's more of intervention focused, how the studies define the intervention or describe the intervention.
Right.
So mm-hmm. we need to kind of group them together based on how similar they are or how different.
Yeah. Right. Avi has done, he's already thinking about our buckets.
Yeah, like next step,
Like, right? Like, what are the buckets we're going to get? So it's, I love that the fact that you're already thinking about what, you know, what are those categories that we might want to think about lumping things into, or which also helps us think about how we define these. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'd love to open it up to the group too to talk about a little bit about when you read that KQ, that first one about telehealth service delivery models. What did that conjure up for you, the folks that do this kind of work?
Well, so can I, I'll answer that, but can I ask another question? So when I read KQ2, the reason I was asking about veteran, non-veteran, is that clearly there's not a lot that's been done within the VA, but if you open it up to global health, call in information, from low and middle income countries, I mean, there's a ton of stuff, particularly in telegynecology. However, that's a very different environment than what we're working in here. So are those kinds of studies included, excluded?
So that's actually, it's a great, we talked briefly about this. I'm relatively familiar with some stuff.
Right. We do a lot of Tanzania.
So that would be a point that we would talk about with our partners. If we want to take a true evidence mapping approach, we would say we would, that would be one of the variables we would collect is country of origin for these studies.
And you
could include those. We could also, and have in the past, made cuts or scoping decisions where we say we want systems that look like the VA. And then we somehow develop a list of countries that have systems that would look like the VA. Or based on maybe socioeconomic or some sort of cut point. We've done that before, and I would hope that you could help me think through with what we would do. But again, I think that is a point that we take up with our partners to see if they're interested. Because that doesn't mean that there isn't an innovation in other countries that could be applicable here. Excellent question.
Particularly in rural health arena.
Exactly.
You said you were going to answer something else.
Service delivery model. When I think about that, I was thinking more of like structures of care. So more like, you know, the primary, like PCNH, those kinds of things. Like I wasn't thinking so much about the mode of delivery. So it's interesting to me that you all jumped to mode. Mm-hmm. Mode is certainly important, but to me that's kind of a sub-point almost of a care delivery model.
Hey, sorry, this is Sachita
on the phone. I just wanted to jump in on the KQ question part. If I'm understanding correctly, we're looking at the telehealth services designed specifically for women and not how we can apply telehealth services to women, right?
Exactly.
Okay, just wanted to clarify my understanding. Thank you.
So I'm sorry, Leah, I want you to make that point again and let us talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I think Karen and Jennifer talked a little bit about mode, which is important, but when I read KQ1 before talking with you all just now, my understanding was that we were looking more at organization of care and that was what we were meaning by delivery model. So things like, you know, patient-centered medical home, like whether, I don't know, leave that to Karen, like whether women's health is like separate or like well integrated with other service delivery things. So it's interesting to me, like mode to me is almost not less important, but kind of a sub element of that. Hayden's actually probably the one.
Hayden, do you have something you want to add? Okay.
Hayden, stop working on Vesper.
14, man.
Or what?
Team.
Is he putting it to?
Yeah.
I need to work on Vesper tonight.
So that may be a good question to bring up to the stakeholders.
Yeah.
Like, what is it that they are talking about? What aspects of these interventions that are out there do they want to know about? Because that gets a lot into kind of what Jennifer was talking about, and Avi was asking about is what kind of things are we going to collect? This may actually be a good time to look at the PICOs, too. So population-wise, I think we've sort of established that we're looking at things specific to women, not things that are have been implemented in both men and women. Interventions, I mean, again, I think we need to think about what kind of models we're talking about, but again, developed specifically for women, and what telehealth means, which is a big question to them, to us, about what they're interested in, how are they defining that. They sort of put in usual care for comparators. I think one thing that will come up that we've looked at a little bit when it comes to the literature out there and comes back to Avi's question is, are we going to be just looking at trials? Are we looking at quasi-experimental trials? What are we looking at? There's a lot of program descriptions out there in the literature, which are not, which may be describing a model, but aren't actually, it's not a study, right? And so I think that will also help us start to narrow down some of what's out there to be more useful for them. Outcomes, we had some questions around outcomes. I'd be interested to hear the folks that have done telehealth work on this. So our stakeholders have put in, they were interested in patient satisfaction, access to care, and clinical quality. And I'm wondering, well, right, so there's a question about what those things mean, but then also, are we likely to find those as outcomes in telehealth?
So.
Yeah, so what, yeah, tell me more, Leah.
Well, I don't know what clinical quality means. I mean, that's a whole, that's a huge arena.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could be looking at, like, guideline concordant care or, you know, like, some specific measure for a study, like medication adherence or health outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally would want clarity about what clinical quality means.
Mm-hmm.
I would be surprised if you would find patient satisfaction, and if you did, I don't know what it would mean either.
Yeah, and whether that means, like, just satisfaction with the telehealth
right.
experience.
So usually that's,
yeah,
I mean, I always, like in my interventions that I build and test, I always ask
like
questions.
Secondary.
Yeah.
Not,
I mean, it's actually mostly qualitative
right.
too, is, you know, talk about what you liked and didn't like about
yeah.
the intervention. And then you might ask some global, how satisfied or dissatisfied were you with the aspects of the intervention. But I don't think a lot, but some, many times it doesn't even make it into the paper.
Right.
We use it to kind of continually improve
yeah,
what
tweak
we,
your
what you're
doing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. And then access to care to me is also a very interesting one, because if people think about that, if you've recruited people into a study, in effect they all have the same
it's artificial access,
right? Yeah. So that is also another weird.
Yeah.
Whereas to me, when I read that, it made me start thinking about, well, if we're giving some people access to telehealth, does that somehow improve access otherwise? Because maybe you're
taking people out of the queue.
Yeah. And so I don't know. I think that and that's a very hot VA issue. I don't know that anybody else thinks about it in the same way, and so, you know, I think those are some questions.
Almost think about it as a subset of satisfaction. Do they feel like they're getting better access?
Perceived access.
Yeah.
Now that's
or maybe like time
yeah.
to wait for care, like those kind of things.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But even then, that's not anything you would measure in a trial or even a quasi-experimental. I mean, that's
it's artificial. Yeah.
Yeah, that's something that you might
yeah.
other types of.
I have two questions. First, the question is for KQ2,
mm-hmm.
which said most commonly used. What's the definition of the most commonly used and how we can define that, for example, based
yeah.
on the sample size, based on the duration of the program? Because, for example, we can have a program that's implemented in 50 states, but the total sample size is 10,000.
Yeah.
But also, we could have just one program in New York with 1 million.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
an example. Each of them defined as the most commonly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to me, they defined it for us. What is the effectiveness of the most common models used in women's telehealth? And then they defined, the following interventions. And to me, are they using the words intervention and model synonymously?
Yeah.
yeah.
So because I had up until you just said that, I had thought that that's what they were. You know, that was what they had done already for us.
That's how I read it too.
Yeah. But it's an excellent point that you're making, because it's
right.
interesting. It gets back to that,
yeah.
what's a model versus a content area
yeah.
versus a service delivery model, which is different
right.
too. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of definitional issues that we need to sort of attack with our
mm-hmm.
and tease out with our partners.
I have two more things for clinical quality.
Yeah.
Do they want to measure it based on, for example, CMS outcome measures
mm-hmm.
or HRQ, or what do you want to measure? Because
who's the benchmark?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
probably
for the access to care, usually,
yes.
technically, as I read, I remember, they measure the number of patients came to the ER before and after of implementing any interventions
mm.
as a measure of an access, because they said, okay, if the people have access to some things, they usually less go to the
mm-hmm.
ER. So if the number of the patients go to the ER in a specific period of time reduce, which means they have more access to other things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we should know that, how the definition of an access.
Yeah. Yeah. And then again, the other thing, if we are, I'm sorry, did I just cut something off?
Yeah, for patient satisfaction, I know that Prasgany score surveys sometimes happen in the clinic setting as well, and the corollary in the inpatient setting are the HCAHPS surveys. So if there's any survey data in the pre and post intervention or implementation of the model period, Prasgany scores could be used for the satisfaction corollary.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I was going to say is, again, if we're taking an evidence mapping approach, we don't really, we just would report out what outcomes are reported across them. And then we would, as Avi said, trying to figure out what are those like buckets. And some of those like buckets might be those three things that they list here, likely not. So that's another thing to think about is, we can specifically look for these since they seem to be interested in them once we get some clarity about what they think these are. But again, if we're doing a traditional, if we are doing a evidence map, it really is what has been collected, and then we report out what has been collected. So that would be novel, that looking at reduction in ER visits would go under that access to care bucket, and that's how it's been measured across 3 studies, 10 studies, a dozen studies, whatever amount of studies. And I think that that may be a way for us to inform future systematic, more focused systematic reviews around this, because we actually don't know what the universe of outcome possibilities are at this point, if that helps at all.
And one other point is that we are not just focused on US, we look at the other countries as well, I'm correct.
So that speaks to Leah's question about are we or are we not. I think that's an open point with our partners. Personally, I think that there are innovations in other countries that I think could be applied here, and I would encourage our partners to look at other countries.
But the point is that, for example, if we want to, for example, we find a study in Sweden and Norway, but the patient satisfaction is totally different based on the culture of those people and the health system.
Absolutely.
And more importantly, access to care.
Absolutely.
They have 100% access
yep.
to care. So that's not applicable here.
Well, it's
but,
more similar to the VA.
I was going to say,
yeah,
but it's
okay.
more like the VA healthcare
okay.
system than the U.S. healthcare system.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, a bit of a, in ways.
Mm-hmm.
Now the VA
mm-hmm.
clinicians around the table can speak to that, but it's, you know, so we're kind of a rarefied
okay.
system. But I think that that speaks to what, you know, when we're talking about applicability, you know, how applicable are these studies based on their, underlying comorbid illnesses, like both mental and physical, region, location, SES, all of those things. We would say, you know, of the 300 studies that we identified, based on these set of characteristics, about 50% of them look more like the VA population, and the other 50% are innovative models but have been done in populations that look very different. So we can when we start contextualizing and summarizing exactly, those are some of the points we're going to want to make, but we need to be thinking about that ahead of time, so we're collecting those variables so we can make those informed speculations around the data, rigorous speculation around the data.
So I think the rest of the topic nomination brief at this point goes on to talk about the sort of preliminary literature search that they did, which I would not focus too much on that.
But it was relatively anemic.
Yeah, with pre-NEMIC, and we've since met with our medical librarian and started to do very broad, like, draft approach to what we think it will look like. So, you know, fortunately, one of the medical librarians we work with has already done some work in the telehealth world, and she had already sort of ready set search terms for that. It did not include things like, it did not include the specifically defined interventions that they had, and it did not necessarily include other things around like mHealth, like
mm-hmm.
like online mobile things. So that's going to be a big part about thinking about the sort of the larger number, because we put in the sort of very broad search terms for any sort of telehealth, telemedicine,
mm-hmm.
video conferencing, mobile health, apps, blah blah blah. I mean, we're looking at 140,000 articles,
which is beyond what we.
It's a little bit beyond what we can do. When we went there and tried
and
to kind of
that's one database.
Yeah. That's one database.
Is that limiting at women? Are you limiting it?
That's everything.
That's
so then we kind of
here.
Right,
yeah.
And then
oh,
the
thank you. Yeah.
right. And so then when we tried to narrow down, looking at reproductive health services, women's health, women, now even
this
just...
This is in Box, if we want to call it in Box.
Yeah.
And have it on the WebEx so everyone can be looking at it. We didn't distribute this because it really is not ready for prime time. It is really just our musings with the medical librarian at this point.
But it gives you a sense of some of the decisions we're going to have to make.
Preliminary search, it was at the bottom.
Okay.
Yeah, it was that...
There it is.
No. Oh.
No,
that's there. It's called Draft Telemedicine. If you go back to the larger category.
Yeah, and this is going to be a really important thing for us to do is to pin them down on what their definition of telehealth is.
So because the bottom there, the draft
mentioned
telemedicine.
Text messaging.
Yeah. They mention everything.
So we tried to narrow it down a little bit further. One of the challenges that things are not always clearly tagged as being for women, and so we've been tossing around some of the ways that that gets tagged. Even though there's a mesh term, it's not always used, and then sometimes we looked at whether women was in the title or abstract, which is really broad, because then if anything that was for men and women probably has the number of women in there. So that's something to kind of think through. Then we also went back and added the terms of particular intervention type, and then we sort of tried to think about what kind of study types are we going to be willing to consider? And so that's that number six down there where this is sort of the collection of terms around trials, controlled trial, quasi-experimental, et cetera. And then if we kind of get all, we were able to get down to closer to around 4,000, 3,000, 4,000, using some
still
of that approach, which is still a lot.
Still too big.
So certainly when we saw those kind of numbers, it reinforced our initial conversation around whether this is really an evidence map versus
A traditional
RSR.
And so, I mean, I think the sticking point for us, and we only have about 10 more minutes together, and some of the advanced work that I'd like for you all to do, because we're actually going to try and meet with the partner organizations either on the 2nd of November or the 9th, Jen's setting up a meeting.
Trying to.
It's like herding cats. But it'll be trying to do it during our normal meeting time, and you aren't required to be there, but it's always... It's a really good learning time to be on those calls and think, and you get to hear firsthand what the partners are really thinking about when they develop this. But what would be useful is if each of you could think about when you think about telehealth, because that's the term that they're using is telehealth, which is different than telemedicine, how you might operationalize that definition or take a dive into the literature and think about other ways. There was a Cochrane review on telemedicine. We pulled that. But if you can be thinking about that and pulling those and then shunting them to me, and then I'll collect them and we can have that. Also, the other bit of homework per se is thinking about terms you would use that are synonymous with telehealth, like video conferencing. Telehealth, telemedicine,
remote consultation
was some of the other ones. Go ahead.
Do you want me to share this? These are the sort of the potential exemplar articles that we.
So let's talk a little bit about let me just finish this thought.
Okay.
So if you all could do that, those two bits of homework, and then kind of shunt those to us, we can get with our medical librarian, and it can also help inform that conversation, and we can gain some consensus. I'm kind of hoping that the meeting will be on the 9th, because then it'll give us the 2nd to kind of dig in a little, because it would be much better if we went into that call with the stakeholders with at least a team consensus about what we're thinking about, that it has to include video, that it has to be synchronous instead of asynchronous. Whatever we think that would be considered the gold standard in this, that we could then apply. And then the other part of that is those terms that you think. That would be helpful. I want to just explain what an exemplar is first. And so one of the ways that we test our search strategy is to go into the literature without our rigorous search strategy and find articles that we think would be eligible for our trial. It's kind of a validation set where you have them and then you look to see if your search picks them up. So then I'll pick up with
you. So
I have one little thing specifically to Eric though.
Okay.
And if you would please remembered lessons learned from trying to do this for CBT, because he's already tried to do this for CBT. The content lead.
Okay, tried to do
for
a
review on telemedicine for CBT.
Okay. Mm.
don't know if he's still there.
Was it M? Was it yeah. Was it Telly? Was it M?
It was telehealth, wasn't it, Eric?
Yeah. Yeah, it was computerized CBT. So I've been sort of keeping a running list of some of the issues that we tackled last time that I'll send to you after the call.
Eric,
just things like what counts as telehealth and what proportion of the intervention has to be telehealth, because sometimes it's psychotherapy with a small computerized component, and we probably don't want to include that, but that's worth asking about.
Those are great, Eric. Yeah.
The list of lessons learned that you remember would be very helpful.
So Jen,
because we've done so many reports in between, I'm sure you remember it much better than we do. I just remember it was painful.
So Jen, that brings up a good point, and we should have this in our archives, though, is the minutes from that stakeholder meeting for them. If we should maybe pull that, and also the agenda for that, because I bet those same definitional issues were on the agenda with those partners, and some of the decisions will be in the minutes from that stakeholder meeting, and so you and I can review that in light of what you all bring, and that will maybe gain some further clarity. I don't think that it was the same partners, so they might have a different take on it, but they were all VA partners, so there might be some similarities. Thank you, Eric. That's super helpful.
Yeah, that's
sure.
And then so you were talking
about. So this is a preliminary exemplary articles collection, but I thought I would just, I made some copies and I pulled the abstract. So if you want to just take a look through them and just, you know, give you a sense, some of them we may decide ultimately are not really exemplars, or if there are others you know of, you know, that you think should be. I think it's just, it's a little bit of just background to start, get your head wrapped around some of the kinds of things we may be coming across and how the definitions may or change which ones might be inclusive. And I just made a couple copies, so I'll give these to you, and then I'll email you the file, and then
send it around. And again, if you come across others that you think would be exemplary, that would be helpful.
How did you come up with the list of studies?
This was
poking around.
So I looked at the ones that they had initially, a list that the stakeholders had sent, and I kind of went through that, cut some, kept some. I've tried to highlight a couple places. So I've organized them into study type, and then I've tried to highlight where I think this is a particular interest for the VA. So something that I know they've done, or there's one or two studies in there that are VA based. It gives you a sense of some of the things that are already happening in the VA. Mm-hmm. And then collected them.
So it's
and I just want to double back on one thing that Avi very smartly brought up early in the conversation.
Some of it's from that.
Study design issues. So that is another way that we can think about doing a broad look, but then narrowing it at some degree. And one common ways that we've done that in the past are things like limiting to only trials. Since this is an organizational intervention, not sure if we'll be able to get away with that for this particular one. So we have other types of, there's other guidance from other systematic review organizations that that focus on interventions that are designed to be organizational interventions, and they have guidance on what type of study designs, criteria, if you're familiar. So there's specific criteria around what kind of trials to include, and so we could follow some of that guidance as a way to also narrow our scope, and it allows for things like quasi-experimentals and time series and some of those other designs that organizational interventions may fall, that may more likely fall into those buckets.
I have 2 points. First, you are not going too deep on the quality of the studies that you find at all.
No. We may do gross quality estimates of the SRs. We could also think about doing a gross quality assessment based on maybe impact factor, which I've seen in some other things. So if it's published in a journals that have this impact factor and above, they would get up, you know, we'd give more weight to them, but we will not have the bandwidth to quality rate individual studies. Might as well just do a traditional SR at that point. But that's an excellent point.
The second thing is that we are limited our search just to the English.
Yes.
So because I didn't see international terms.
Yeah,
so
that's actually a good point. But we do. We don't have the capabilities even for Google Translator.
And right now I have one suggestion to add the word female.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And I know there were some background filters on this, and I think she might have added the human and...
Yeah, it's not captured.
And English only, but that they don't show up on her terms, but that's, we need to double check that. The good thing is unlike other probably systematic reviews you've worked on in the past, we have a bit of a machine that helps us with this. We have, you know, Avi and Jen and then our methodologist, but then we also have access to this medical librarian who is quite expert.
So helpful.
Yeah.
Can we go down to the knots at the bottom, Avi? Yeah, I want to see what she nodded.
She sends us.
Oh, there's.
She's not a content expert, Avi.
Not.
Okay. So she didn't put English in. Okay.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Can I ask a question?
Oh, it is done. She did.
Are these...
Thank you.
So are we looking at prevention or women who have some disease?
I think according to the topic nomination brief, they're interested in both. They're interested in tele-wellness, which to me is how do you optimize the health that you have, and then things for people who are sick, because they are like telecolposcopy, so there's something, you're getting a procedure in you that might lead to other illnesses, and telemental health. Obviously, that's for someone who has some sort of mental health issue already.
So this is more of prevention.
Telegynecology is very broad. Right. I mean, that's, you know, depending on how you divide prevention and treatment. I include telecolposcopy in telegynecology. So it includes treatment and prevention.
Mm-hmm. They're talking about telepharmacy.
Yeah.
What does telepharmacy capture? It's like diabetes, hypertension, those kind of things?
Any
provision
medication.
Of drugs, provision of medications via some...
For whatever.
Remote, yeah. It's super broad, Avi. You're asking all the right questions. I mean, I would also be interested to know what...
Mapping makes sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I would also think, you know, what we're kind of baffled at what telecare coordination could be. I mean,
I use that in oncology sometimes, but I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
What's that mean?
What is it?
Like if you're in a place where you're going to an academic medical center like Duke or just cancer care, and then you're getting shipped out to the community very far away
for your primary care?
For your primary care. Then like there might be an opportunity for like your primary care physician to like call into like a team board meeting or find out like what's happening to your care, because otherwise like there's not an opportunity for communication.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, that's a little outdated because like generally now we do everything electronically through EHRs.
Yeah.
Right.
And we have a lot of community-based oncology centers that like are not islands.
That are tapped in.
Like DCM.
Yeah.
You know, same thing here locally. So, but I mean, historically that is the thing.
And this is probably getting at the situation the VA has right now, which is they've sent a lot of care outside the VA and are trying to figure out how to coordinate care that's purchased on the community with what's happening inside the VA, which is a bit of a mess.
Yeah. Excellent. So this is, we're just starting this conversation, and I mean, this is a real opportunity for you all to help us shape this out. I think for our own sanity and also for this to be the best product, we need to go into that partnership meeting with some pretty firm ideas about what we think this includes, and then get some clarity about what their needs are, and so, because it will be a sort of a compromise between those two.
Yeah.
Okay.
The one thing that I think
definitely
heard was we need to walk in saying, this is how we define an evidence map.
Yeah.
And as a first step, this is what we really think you want. And we're not going to be giving you any effect sizes at all.
I think absolutely educating our stakeholders on what is the difference between an evidence map and a traditional systematic review is key.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely key. Giving them examples and even different than the VA ones, because some of those were were not evidence maps, they were hybrids. And even I think some of the stuff that we've done recently is more of a hybrid. So I agree with you, Jen, that there's got to be a significant education piece. It'll be educating me too. I've actually, to be perfectly honest, I've never done an evidence map, so I'm super stoked to try it. So you will be learning all together.
Karen's done an evidence map.
Mm-hmm.
If I mentioned the word evidence map to Denise out in Montana, she would, or she, no, she's in Minnesota now.
Minnesota.
She would probably go screaming down the hall.
You were going to say, I'm sorry. Yes.
We are not absolutely going to the legal issues of the telehealth at all.
The legal issues.
Yes.
Tell me what you mean by that.
Because, for example, you have a physician, you have a primary care physician in a rural area, and you have a specialist internist, for example, in a VA here.
And what if something's happened to the patients? Who is responsible for that? This is one of the main barriers that physicians do not like to take responsibility on telehealth, because who's responsible here?
Again, if it's an evidence map and that's an outcome that's collected in a study, we would report that.
They didn't ask for it.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is that if we're doing evidence mapping, we're collecting kind of what those universe of outcomes are that evidence that telehealth has.
I wonder if they may not be thinking about it because it's all, what they think of is all housed within the VA. Okay. But I think it's an important point, especially when we start thinking about
connected outside.
And what about costs? Yeah. Something related to cost savings or cost-related outcomes? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. From just the points made here today, I'm really excited to be working with all of you. I think that there's been some really, I think that we've been thinking about this topic for a couple weeks now and haven't been thinking about it the way that you have. So please keep your ideas coming. This is really exciting. Thanks, everybody. We will make a decision Monday, Tuesday to see if we're going to have our meeting on Wednesday, right?
Is there a reason to have a meeting?
No, not unless people get me your stuff, your definitions, yes, there is. If people get us the definition stuff, then we meet and we start developing our internally what our definition of telehealth is. So we have that for the stakeholder call. But that'll be just diving into this definition a little bit more, and hopefully Hayden and John will be able to be on the call, people had a long history in this area. All right, now thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.